Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice. Mona Shaw, I've often heard about EB5. It's all about the money. That's why today we have the president of EB5 Global, Devin Williams, with us, right?
That's right, Mark. I'm really excited that Devin is a guest on our show today. And Devin is one person who really does understand the financials. Welcome, Devin.
Thank you, Mona. It's great to be here.
So, Devin, tell us a little bit about yourself.
In terms of my education, I did my undergrad at Georgetown, and then I did my MBA at Harvard Business School.
Wow, that's great.
Oh, thank you. That was a great experience. And in terms of my career, I started out my career in investment banking. I've been in finance for 23 years. I've also started other companies after investment banking. And in 2011, I was the co-founder of EB5 Global. Since 2011, we've completed 6 EB5 projects. And we're really proud to have both a 100% approval track record with USCIS, and we have also outperformed every single one of our projects in terms of financial performance.
So do you think that because you have such a good financial background, that that really is essential for EB5 deals?
Yes, I do think it's essential for EB5 deals. And I think it's essential for when you're thinking about the structuring of a project, thinking about how you're protecting investors and how you're also achieving the goals of the regional center and of the developers. And so I think that that has been an advantage that we've had in terms of our business. And I think that that's some knowledge that I can help kind of share. You know, investors are often asking, how do you pick a project? Like, how do you know if something is a safe project? And I think that there is an aspect of finance and an aspect of financial structuring that really impacts that.
You know, it's been really interesting because we've had a lot of regional centers on this program. I do ask these questions a lot because I'd like to hear everybody's different take. I think you'd agree, Mark, we've had different answers from almost everybody, right?
Exactly. And as you said, it's not the first regional center we've talked to on this show, as well as some regional center directors have a merger and acquisitions and financial background. That being said, Devin has a pretty diverse background before she even got into EB5, before she founded EB5 Global. Devin, let me ask you, what got you into EB5?
How I ended up getting into EB5 was actually because of the 2008 downturn. So my father is a real estate developer. His real estate development company has been in business for 40 years, and they've done over $2.5 billion worth of real estate development. But when the 2008 crash happened, there was no access to capital in the United States for real estate development. And so in talking with my father, he actually suggested, why don't you start a separate company to actually go and raise capital once he had learned about the EB5 program abroad, like mostly in China is where we were focused at that point in time. That was how it started. It was really to help finance projects that we knew were great projects in Portland that couldn't get financing in the United States.
Interestingly, Mark, a lot of people who opened regional centers around about that time, and that was also very close to the time that construction workers were allowed to be counted as EB5 for the purposes of EB5. Prior to that, construction workers weren't even counted. But at the same time, Devin, you can agree with me that back in 2008 and 2009, a lot of the structures of the regional center deals, they just weren't very good at all, which unfortunately, you know, we are seeing come out now.
I think that's true. You know, there was a lack of sophistication in the market in the early days of EB5 that I think has changed dramatically. And I think that you have more experienced developers that have gotten into EB5, and you have more people with more financial experience that have gotten into EB5. So I think that in terms of that, the quality of the deal, I think has absolutely increased.
Yeah, I agree with you. The deals that have been coming in over the last 2 to 3 years specifically are such a better quality than the you had in the olden days. But what makes a good deal? I mean, you talk about alignment of interests financially. What does that mean?
So one thing that I think is interesting is there are better projects that are on the market that doesn't mean that they are necessarily safer for the EB-5 investor.
Oh, interesting.
And that comes down to financial alignment of interests. So you have more sophisticated players that are on the market, but that doesn't mean that the EB-5 investor is necessarily more protected in those investments. And that's where it comes down to financial structuring of the deal.
Hmm. We have a lot of listeners who, you know, don't really have a financial background, being very honest. A lot of you immigration attorneys do not have that. So if I could ask you to explain, first of all, what do you mean by an alignment of interest?
Okay. An alignment of financial interest means that what's good for one party is also good for the other party. And so what's good for the developer financially would also be good for the investor financially, either from the amount of income that they're receiving or from the likelihood of them getting their capital back in a timely manner.
So in what circumstances would the alignment of interest not be good for, say, the investor, but good for the developer?
Well, let's start with the regional centers. One of the things that's important to do is look at how everybody makes money in a deal. So if you look at the majority of projects on the market, most of them are debt projects. And the way that a regional center makes money on a debt project is between the spread between the amount of interest that the developer is paying and the amount of interest that the investor is receiving. So say, for instance, there's a 6% loan and the investor is getting 0.5% in interest. Then 5.5% is going to the regional center. What that means is that as long as that loan is outstanding, the regional center is getting payments of that interest. So it is in the interest of the, it's in the financial interest of the regional center that that loan stays outstanding as long as possible. But that is not what the EB-5 investor wants. What the EB-5 investor wants is they want to get their green card and they want to get their capital back as quickly as possible. So that is a misalignment of interests where it's in the financial best interest of the regional center to keep the loan out for a long time. And it's in the desired interest of the investor to get the loan back as quickly as possible.
You know, Devin, we get asked this all the time, especially from investors overseas in India and English speaking countries who have a little bit more understanding as well of how everything works here. They all ask, why is the investment interest amount which is paid to the investor so low? Because in some projects, it's as low as 0.025%. You know, it's really crazy amounts.
I mean, I would say that EB-5 is a very symbiotic program. And the three parties that are involved here are the U.S. government that is getting job creation, the developer that is getting a cheaper source of capital, and then the investor that is getting a green card. So the reason why the U.S. developer will use EB-5 is because it is a cheaper source of capital.
Of course.
If it's not a cheaper source of capital for them, then they won't go through the headache of recruiting all of these individual investors from all over the world.
As well as being a cheaper sort of capital, though, it's also non-dilutive as far as equity, and it also doesn't require, you know, the same kind of documentation and guarantees, et cetera, that a bank might require.
Absolutely. Although that depends on the deal in specific. So for instance, we have a loan deal and our only loan deal that we provide, they have the same rights as actually the current lender on the project that has the bridge, which is Goldman Sachs. And so our EB-5 investors actually have the same rights as US Bank, as a US banking institution on our projects. But that is true that on most EB-5 projects, they get substantially diluted rights, essentially, in their mezzanine loan, in their second or third position loan.
Right. As well as that, when you're dealing with some countries like China and Korea, for example, or Vietnam, where you have third-party agents, the third-party agents have a financial stake as well.
Absolutely. That will come out of the money that the regional center is getting. So for instance, that 5.5% that we were talking about, that's going to go to paying finders that are recruiting investors in other countries, and in addition to paying the regional center. And so that's where that money is going.
So if you have a regional center, which is not a third-party regional center, and it's perhaps owned by the developer, then don't you sort of lose that 5 to 6%? Because that's not really counted anymore.
You mean like if the developer is raising the capital?
That's right.
Yes. Then what you would have is the developer is probably paying the, if the developer is the regional center and they're the developer, then what they're doing is they're paying some portion of what would be the interest to that to the foreign finders. They're still probably paying a foreign finder. And so then their cost of capital, instead of being 6%, is probably closer to 3 to 4%.
But there's still a cost of capital.
Well, they have to pay that finder. So that's their cost of capital.
Right. Well, not just paying finders. There's marketing costs. There's costs for going to events.
It's true, but that's negligible compared to the fee that you're paying to the agents.
Yeah, that I totally agree. And is there any instance can you think of that there's a cheaper way of raising capital without paying a finder?
Well, you could go, I mean, you get referrals from immigration attorneys. Immigration attorneys can't accept referral fees. And so there are sources. And actually what we get is we get a lot of referrals from our past clients who have friends or family members that then want to make an investment. And so really, as you have successful projects in the market, you naturally start to have referrals that come directly to you.
Yeah. So you actually do have less cost of getting the capital in, less cost related to getting the capital in as you get more successful.
You know, Devin, I'm not an immigration attorney, so if anyone comes to you by way of this podcast, feel free to give me a commission.
You know what? You're a U.S. person, and so I can't do that.
That's quite all right. That's quite all right. I realize that there's a cost of capital in there, and let's make sure the projects get a cheap and effective source of capital while not completely diluting what the investors get.
Well, it's really interesting as well, Mark, because so many people want to know how do RCs make money? And we do explain to a lot of our investors, but I think it's nice to hear from the actual, you know, from the horse's mouth. How do you guys actually make money?
We do have one debt project. And in that debt project, we have the interest spread, just like all the other regional centers, because that's how it is structured with a debt project.
Well, just for the layman who's listening, mm-hmm. a debt project as opposed to what, an equity project, what's the difference?
Sure. So you are, the investor is making an investment in a limited partnership. And then that limited partnership is either providing a loan to a project or providing an equity investment to the project. And so based on that, your collateral may change. If you have the loan, then your collateral is that property. And also, but as an equity investor, you are an owner of the actual hotel or condo or whatever that project is.
But as an equity owner, you would not be getting your money back like in the same way that you would as in a debt structure.
No.
After a certain period of time, that is.
Yes, in an equity project, in the way that, well, the way that we structure our equity projects is a little bit different. In an equity project, we're actually able to completely align the financial interests of the investor and the interests of the developer in the regional center. And the way that we do that is that all of the profit that we earn from the equity investment comes as profit sharing. So instead of taking a fee off the top or like the interest expense that gets paid to the project before anything goes to the investors, we don't make anything unless the project is making money. So we only make money when the EB-5 investor is making money. So on our equity projects, it ranges anywhere from basically a 3% annual return to a 4% annual return on our projects. The return starts as soon as the project opens. So after construction is completed and the project begins cash flowing, then cash flow is distributed to the investors. And that's when we get our profit sharing from the project. Only when the investors are getting paid and the project is profitable.
But the investors' amount would be fixed, correct? They wouldn't be getting the 3-4%.
So the investors actually in our current project right now, it's structured that our investors receive 4% annually.
Wow, that's pretty good because there aren't too many projects out there which would give you that. And often if somebody comes to me and says such and such a project's giving me 4%, we look at them warily because it's like, if you're going to get such a high percentage, are you sure you're going to, the project has enough capitalization to give you your money back?
So that's a great point. That's kind of the difference between debt and equity. What you have to understand when you're understanding the cost of capital is that, so for instance, if you have a loan and it's a first position loan, then the market in the US for a first mortgage loan is probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 5-6%, depending on the project. It could even be a little bit lower than that. If you're looking for equity in the United States for a project, you're looking at returns that are in the high teens, like low 20s. So as you can see, to get EB-5 equity into a project at 4% a year is saving you roughly 16% a year of what you would be paying for U.S. equity. So it's actually a great deal and from the developer's perspective. And so in our perspective, because we are getting equity, we're still getting an incredible deal on that equity to give them 4%. And what we recognize is that the investment is now out for 5-7 years. In China, sometimes that could be even longer.
Right.
And so it only seems fair that they should have some return on their capital over that time.
I love how the interests are aligned in that you get paid when the investor gets paid. So it's in your interest, the regional center, to make sure that you select projects that are profitable, that you go into an equity situation with them and then offer an equity situation for the investor. Although 4% is much higher than what you hear with some of these debt regional center structures for EB-5 investment. Yeah, this sounds really nice, especially with the, as you mentioned, the alignment with interest.
So to build on that, there is additional alignment actually in the return of capital. So what I was talking about is when the project is cash flowing over those first 5 years of operations, but also when we do a sale or a refinance at the, when we're returning the capital to the investors, 100% of the capital, first you pay off any first mortgage like you would on any project, and then 100% of the capital goes to the EB-5 investors before the developer makes anything on the sale or refinance.
So the important thing for an investor to understand, and this is my take from all of this, Devin, is that just because a project is not saying, okay, you can have your money back in 6 or 7 years, instead I'm going to give you interest at 4%, that is not a deal they should run away from. In fact, they probably will do better.
Well, I think that what you need to look at is not just what is the project telling you that they're going to pay you, but the fundamentals of the project and how safe that project seems. Because people can tell you anything, but you want to know that you really believe in this project. It gets back to your point, Mark, about due diligence. The fact of the matter is a regional center that makes all of their money over the course of time when the loan is outstanding, they don't actually have any financial incentive to make sure that the loan is repaid. Yeah. Because at the end of 7 years or 9 years, whatever that term is of that loan, if the developer ends up not paying that, the regional center has already made 100% of their capital. They've made 100% of their profit on the deal over the lifetime of the loan. And there's no penalty to them financially if the investors don't get their money back. Whereas in our structure, if we don't pay the investors back 100% of their both their profit that we promised them and the $500,000 investment amount, then we don't make any money on the project. So we have a very strong financial incentive to make sure that all of our investors get their capital back, because otherwise we would essentially be working on this project for 7 years for almost nothing. And so that really creates that incentive to do really thorough due diligence, to feel highly confident in your project, because you know that you're not getting paid if it doesn't work out.
So the due diligence isn't just on the project, but also on what the regional center is up to as well.
Yes. I mean, fundamentally, I think the most important thing to do the due diligence on is the project. And you want to see the regional center track record and you want to understand what their financial incentives are.
Right, right. You know, everybody comes and they say, well, this project has said I'll get my money back in 5 years. We really try to explain to clients that 5 years is an artificial figure right now. You do not get your money back in most real estate projects in 5 years. It's just not possible, just because of the very nature of the way that, again, the way the financials are aligned and the time that it takes for the 526 petition, et cetera, to get through. Most large real estate projects just cannot give you your money back in 5 years. Would you agree?
I think that is largely true, though I think that 5 to 7 years is a reasonable time frame. Like in all of our PPMs, we say it's going to be between 5 and 7 years, because it is challenging to get it back in 5 years if that's from the start of construction.
Right.
So if you're starting construction and maybe it's almost 2 years of construction and then you need to get ramp up to stabilization before you're ready to sell, that's a little bit challenging.
I think that's really what I was referring to, yes.
Yes. And so with our projects, we always say it's going to be between 5 and 7 years. But in addition to that, something that we do that almost nobody else does is that we create financial penalties for ourselves if we don't return the money by the end of year 7. And I don't know of any other EB-5 company that actually creates financial penalties for the regional center and the developer if they don't make that by the end of 7 year return of capital date.
Well, that's good to hear, but what kind of financial penalties are we talking about?
So for instance, this gets a little bit complicated, but in our previous equity projects, for instance, it was basically we had a 15% capped return, which we say is about 3% a year over 5 years. But if we didn't, and we did a 70-30 split on the profits over that time, If we get to the end of the seventh year and we haven't returned the capital, then it goes from 70-30 to 75-25 to 80-20 to 85-15. So the investors continue to receive more and more cash flow distributions, and only 50% of those cash flow distributions count towards their interest and their return of capital. And the other 50% of those are just additional returns over and above. And so that's for the next 3 years. If we didn't have it back within 10 years, then 100% of the cash flow distributions are just additional return. So we, all of a sudden, the cost of capital is almost doubling for us if we keep that money out. And so you have a very, very strong financial incentive to get that paid off as quickly as possible, either sold or refinanced.
Well, you're right. I haven't heard of many regional centers giving them that penalties.
It's very interesting. It almost sounds like a balloon loan for debt, but they've structured this for an equity deal. So it's interesting.
It is, Mark. And we do have projects which, you know, capital was raised back in 2010, 2011, and because of delays in construction and whatever, although everybody has received green cards from these particular projects, the actual project is not anywhere near finished. So nobody's anywhere near getting their money back. I'm not saying that they won't get their money back, but then it's just that it's so delayed. And that is what we've seen over and over again in large real estate projects.
Right. And to use Devin's illustration, if it is a debt deal where the regional center is essentially making the spread between the developer and the investor, and they make that money as long as that debt is held out, well, their interests really aren't aligned. So why push it, essentially? Keep it open as long as possible. It doesn't really help the investor, but I can see where those particular regional centers aren't at risk. But it sounds like what Devin is telling us with EB-5 Global, they actually write in some disincentives so that they don't do that.
Devin, the other thing that we do look at when we're looking at projects where there's an awful lot of different debts is the risk of high debt.
Yes, I think that's a very important aspect to look at in a project. Very often we see people talk about a project and they say, well, there's only 30% EB-5 on the project.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. But it's sitting behind a 50% or 60% first mortgage loan. And so
sometimes the second mortgage too.
Yes, which is frightening. So what you have in that kind of a situation is you have a very highly leveraged project and the EB-5 is sitting at the very bottom of the capital stack. This creates problems for a number of reasons. When you're looking at a project, you really want to look at the total debt on the project, not just the EB-5 debt. Because if there's a 50% first mortgage sitting in front of the EB-5, then that full first mortgage has to be repaid. And then the EB-5 is the last 30%. But the total leverage on the project is 80%. And that's quite common in this industry.
So if you have a project with 80% of debt, what does that mean when it comes to refinancing?
So it means a couple of things. When it comes to refinancing, it's going to be much more difficult for the developer to refinance that because they can't refinance out just the 30%. They're going to have to refinance out the whole capital stack, that whole piece of debt, the first mortgage most likely and the second.
So it's very likely that there's not a lot of money left over, or maybe not enough, to, even if it's only 35% EB-5, but not even enough to pay them off.
Well, there's another problem in refinancing. So if you look at people's financial incentives again, so you have the first mortgage, and maybe that first mortgage is at roughly 6%. And then you have an EB-5 second or mezzanine, or maybe it's even a third position loan. That interest is probably also going to be 6%, 5%. But if you were to finance that mezzanine loan in the United States, you would be paying 10 to 14%, maybe even 20% on that second or third position piece of debt, which is what the EB-5 is invested at. And the reason that's important is because now the project, it's not just that it has to support the current interest burden of the project with that 80% debt. It needs to actually be able to support a higher level of interest because there's no way that they're going to get that piece of EB-5 refinanced at EB-5 rates. It's going to be refinanced at 10% or higher, or maybe even 14%. So what you're looking at is it's much harder to actually execute that refinancing because the typical EB-5 project has an interest rate that's not a market interest rate.
Right. And these are concepts which the average investor really doesn't understand. Often they will look for a project, and I don't know if you've had trouble with Portland, Oregon, where people say, Portland where?
We definitely have had that. We definitely, but it's interesting. The projects that we've had with the strongest financial returns have been in Portland, because what happens is that the cost of building in Portland is cheaper than building in San Francisco or Los Angeles or New York. And so even though all of our projects have been very successful, our project in Portland actually, in terms of return on each dollar spent, is higher because the cost of actually building in those areas is a lot lower than building in the middle of downtown Los Angeles.
Well, I have to say, all of this is fascinating, mainly because so few people really do understand the financial implications with an EB5 project. And also, marketing material really tends to oversimplify everything. The misalignment of debt, I know how you've already spoken about how it works in the equity projects, Devin, but how does it work in your debt projects?
So the way that we deal with misalignment of interest, we still get paid on the interest spread just like every other project, because that's kind of how the structure of getting paid on debt projects happens. But what we did is we required that our EB5 loan be a first mortgage loan. So there's no bank in front of our EB5 loan. And then we also...
That's important.
That's critical.
Yeah.
The other thing that we did is that the leverage, the total amount of debt on the project is only 34%, and everything else is equity. So by keeping the leverage really low, we're able to protect our investors. Getting a refinance on a 34% loan is easy to do. Not only that, but when you're refinancing a 34% loan and it's a first mortgage and there's no other debt on the project, you can refinance it at US rates. So the loan interest rate is 6% that the developer is paying for the EB5 capital, but that's the same rate that they would pay for US capital. So it doesn't create that impediment of actually getting it refinanced. And actually, in depending on what the debt market looks like, it creates an incentive for our developer to actually refinance the EB5 quickly, because once it gets out of the construction phase and it's fully leased up, then they can probably get a loan that's actually cheaper than the 6% that they're paying for the EB5.
That makes sense, Devin, because I can imagine almost any domestic bank would jump at the chance to refinance and restructure a project that has at most 34% debt. But let me ask you, how much importance is put into these financial projections?
Financial projections are critical because they're actually going to impact your EB5 investment in a number of ways. One is on an immigration front. So part of the job creation is going to come from the performance of the asset or the project. And so if when the person's 526 is approved, it's based on what the project says they're going to do. It's what the project is planning to do. But the A29 approval is based on what the project actually did. So if you go out with really aggressive financial projections in the beginning and you don't hit those financial projections, then you also won't hit your job numbers. So from an immigration perspective, financial projections do have an important role to play.
Even though they are good for marketing.
And that's the problem. They are good for marketing. And so people try to be more aggressive. They want to be aggressive because they want to increase their job counts. And they want to be aggressive because they want it to look like a good financial investment. But on the other side, so you have the immigration impact of financial projections, but then you also have the impact financially of the project and its ability to refinance, its ability to be sold later is also going to be on the actual performance. And so you really need to make sure that a project is using conservative financial projections, that they're not assuming top of the market numbers, and they're not assuming that everything is going to go perfectly and, you know, straight up, because that doesn't give them any room if there's an economic downturn. And that aspect, a set of aggressive financial projections combined with high leverage, magnifies that risk. Because if you have a highly levered project and you have projections that are very aggressive, then if you have a downturn, then there's a good chance that you're not going to make your numbers, and you could potentially go into default on your loan, which if you're in second or third position, you're probably going to lose your money in the project. And so it's really important that you establish that the company that you're working with uses conservative financial projections just as a way of protecting both your immigration status and also the return of capital.
So conservative financial projections is essentially going to set you up for, well, a winning game, where if you had something that's aggressive to draw investors in, the moment they get in, well, that's where things start to slip down.
That's a good sum up, Mark.
Well, thank you, Mona. I do try. And Devin, thank you so much for coming on EB5 Investment Voice and sharing with us some of the insight of your regional center and how you run the projects within it.
Devin, thank you for enlightening us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.